I was worried when I came down here, and actually when I woke up this morning, how I was going to spend 45 minutes answering this question, but that problem has been alleviated, because I think I've got about 10 minutes, which is fine. 5 minutes, okay. So he held up the stop sign, too, and I can do that right now. So I want to spend a little bit of time trying to answer this question, but then a little bit of time as well focusing on what I think can be done to actually select for fertility. So why do we care if scrotal circumference is related to female fertility or not? And I hate to say this, but at a meeting like this, it probably makes sense to everyone. Fertility is at least twice as economically relevant as any other suite of traits. And admittedly, that depends on the specific herd. If I have extremely high levels of fertility, so extremely high preg rates, then the economic incentive of getting a little bit better is much less for me than it is for you if you already have poorer levels of fertility. So it is herd-based, but certainly more important than growth and carcass. Female fertility data, unfortunately, and certainly the reprophys people in here can attest to this, are generally harder to collect. And certainly they're recorded, generally speaking, later in life. So it takes a long time to generate a lot of data, particularly as we think about sire selection. So scrotal circumference represents a potential indicator trait that we can utilize to try to select for improved female fertility. And it's a potential indicator trait because it's cheaper, easier to collect, and we can collect it at a year of age in bulls. But the benefit of an indicator trait really depends on the genetic correlation between it and the trait that we're really interested in improving. So that's fundamentally the question we want to answer. And again, to illustrate the importance of reproduction from a system-level perspective, this is hot-off-the-press work, right, from Gordon Dickerson in 1970 that clearly illustrates that if we want to improve economic efficiency in our herds, what's the best thing we can do? Have more calves, right? That's a no-brainer, but Gordon said it far more eloquently than that. And Merlin Nielsen, a colleague of mine, summarized some of that work about a year ago, and you'll see that heterosis from crossing, obviously, is one way we can do that. So for commercial producers in the audience, if a fundamental concern is what do I do to improve, from a genetics perspective, the fertility of my herd, crossbreed, right? Crossbreed. And certainly, non-additive genetic effects or heterosis improve fertility more than they do production or carcass traits. And again, the 2-to-1-to-1 number there in terms of economic incentive to improve reproduction as compared to growth or in carcass merit. And of course, that leads to an advantage in cumulative weaning weight just from crossbreeding. So if the thought was, I really need to go out and select bulls that have larger scrotal circumference because that's the only chance I have at improving fertility, there are other things that you can do that will have a very large impact on that. Okay, so who should care about the potential relationship between scrotal circumference and female fertility? If you're a seed stock producer, your principal job is to increase the additive genetic merit in the animals. Right? That's what you do. You don't sell bulls, you sell genetics. Right? And so one interesting thing would be then, maybe I actually need to include scrotal circumference in what I select for so I can improve the genetic merit of reproduction in my herd. Commercial producers, what's your job? It's to select bulls based on additive genetic merit, or EPDs, that have the chance to improve fertility, and hopefully these are weighted economically in some kind of index, and then place them into a well-structured crossbreeding program. So, scrotal circumference, is that heritable? The answer is yes, it is. At least moderately heritable. A great review for anyone that's interested, Coots and others in the early 1990s did a review of all the genetic parameters in the literature at that time. Excellent resource, says that scrotal circumference is about 45% heritable. And there's other estimates in the literature that range from about 30% to 70%. But the fact is, if we select on scrotal circumference, we can certainly change it. So the literature is pretty firm on that. What about heritability of heifer pregnancy? Generally, in Bos Taurus cattle, those estimates are pretty low, in the range of 10 to 15%, depending on what study you actually look at. And I quote a couple here using Red Angus data, and then a couple others from work out of the University of Nebraska, looking at either pregnancy status following the first breeding season, calving status, or weaning status. and all of those relatively low. Now, the point is if a trait is lowly heritable, that does not mean that we can't make change. Okay, we can make change. We just may not do it as quickly as if the trait was more heritable. The other common flaw in our thought process is that if a trait's lowly heritable, that means there's not much genetic variation. That's not true either. It just means that there's substantially more environmental variation. Okay? So there's variation there that we can capture and take advantage of through selection. Now, what about Bos indicus? It's a bit different there. And I actually picked out some relatively large estimates to show you here. These are estimates of 0.6, close to 0.7 heritability for heifer pregnancy in Bos indicus derivative cattle. Those are a bit high, but if you look through the literature, those estimates generally are larger for Bos indicus than they are for Bos taurus. Part of this reason is because pregnancy obviously is a 0-1 trait. Okay, an individual female cannot be 75% pregnant. That doesn't work. They're either 0 or 1. I'm not a biologist, and I understand that much. Okay, but the fact is, as we deviate further and further from 50-50, 50% pregnant, 50% open, it becomes harder and harder to estimate things like heritability. And we'll actually get the largest estimates when it's close to 50-50. And the fact is, in a lot of the field data that we have for Bos taurus cattle, a lot of heifers get pregnant. A lot of heifers get pregnant. And you're looking at me like, great, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem is, when we try to analyze it, that becomes a challenge. And that's why we see higher estimates in Bos indicus than we do in Bos taurus. So the fundamental question, though, is scrotal circumference related to age at puberty? The answer is, the literature is pretty firm on this as well, yes, but that genetic correlation is relatively low. Okay, and it's negative, which is what we'd expect. Larger scrotal circumference has a tendency to decrease age at puberty, right? So the correlation certainly is there, but it's relatively weak. Does scrotal circumference have a genetic relationship with heifer pregnancy? In Bos taurus cattle, pretty much no. That genetic correlation is pretty close to zero. Okay? And understand what we're trying to do. We're trying to go from scrotal circumference to age at puberty and then to heifer pregnancy. So an A to B to C. And we say A is related to B and B is related to C. So we hope that A is also related to C. And the literature says that's not necessarily true. However, again, in Bos indicus cattle, Eller and others in 2004 saw a small, okay, relatively slight genetic correlation between scrotal circumference and heifer pregnancy. So I would argue that these studies suggest that in Bos taurus cattle, the correlation between scrotal circumference and heifer pregnancy is pretty much null. And in Bos indicus cattle, it's slight and perhaps even negligible. So what do we do? Well, I'd argue, how many of you think that scrotal circumference is an economically relevant trait? Anyone? One person? Two people? I disagree. Some of you may sell testicles for Rocky Mountain oysters, in which case that is economically relevant. There's a direct revenue stream. But outside of that, there's really not. Okay? Now, what does have a direct revenue stream is the number of calves we have, okay? Female pregnancy, and then, of course, an AI stud raised their hand, male fertility, in terms of producing ability, that has a direct revenue stream as well. So those are economically relevant traits. So should we stop collecting scrotal circumference because I've argued that it's not directly related to female fertility? Well, it's probably the best indicator we have on a large-scale basis of male fertility. So while it may not be directly related to female fertility, certainly there have been examples in the literature where increasing scrotal circumference does have a desired effect on several sperm traits. So the inferences here, even though the relationship between scrotal circumference and female reproductive traits is near zero, it doesn't necessarily mean that we should discard scrotal circumference EPDs because it very well may be related to male fertility traits. So alternate approaches to selecting for fertility, and I would be an advocate of actually selecting directly on fertility if that's what we want to improve. There was a meeting by the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium in 2009, kind of centered on this, and an audience of academics and producers, and the producers threw out traits they thought were important. Weaning success, first service conception, postpartum interval, those are traits they thought were important. And there's some problems with all of these. Some of the limitations are how do we correctly record these traits. These phenotypes aren't necessarily easy to collect, and what's the return on investment for having done so? So as we look through some of these different traits, for instance, days to calving, it has a lot of nice properties. It's been discussed a lot in the literature, relatively heritable. It can be censored, though. What do you do with one that never conceived, right? So it has to have a record of some kind to include in the analysis because that's valuable data. Heifer pregnancy information, I put ECP, so extreme category problems. Again, you want every animal in your herd to get pregnant, but if they're all pregnant in a contemporary group, we really have no information there from a genetics perspective because they all have exactly the same phenotype. First insemination success, okay? Did they conceive the first time they had an opportunity? In AI data, this is easy to get at. In natural service data, it's not. Okay, that's not easy to classify in natural service data. We may know when we turn the bulls out. We know when she had a calf. We make a guess as to when she actually conceived based on some average gestation length. But you guys know very well that not every cow gestates the same number of days. They don't all follow the calendar for whatever reason. So that makes that trait challenging. Longevity. And a lot of breeds publish stayability, which is essentially longevity. Problem is it can take a very long time to get a complete record on a female. And reason for culling is not always well documented. Apparently, most seed stock producers cull cows for other, right? So they get a long list of reasons why they culled her, and a lot of them cull her for other reasons. And other isn't very heritable. Age at puberty, that's, again, hard data to collect. All right, and it's not directly the trait we're after, which is, did she conceive or not? And then novel indicators. We heard some indications of this earlier today, things like antral follicle count. But if it's going to be a good indicator to use in genetic selection, it needs to be cheap to record. And right now, a trait like this isn't necessarily cheap to record. So current evaluations, if you're buying bulls and fertility's on your mind, and Simmental, Red Angus, Gelvie, Hereford, and I probably missed some here, they have EPDs for stayability, which is essentially reproductive longevity. Some other breeds have heifer pregnancy EPDs. I put up here as examples, Red Angus and Black Angus both have those. So if you want to select for improved female fertility in bull selection, use the EPDs that directly get at that. You'll be much more successful that way than selecting on an indicator trait like scrotal circumference, which the data suggests perhaps is not directly related. Current limitations to doing this in our seed stock operations, correct contemporary grouping. If you're involved in the seed stock industry, this is a problem for fertility traits. So for heifer pregnancy, for instance, in a contemporary group, I may have everyone that had a yearling weight record, but I don't know if they actually had a chance to get bred. Were they all exposed? Right? That's critical information to know to develop an accurate genetic evaluation. Quality data coming in, I mentioned the problems with recording why a female left the herd, and also quantity of data getting turned in. And I always get this chicken or the egg argument when you talk to breed associations and producers. Producers say, I'll turn my data in if they'll use it. Breed associations say, I'll use it if you turn it in, right? And then we get nowhere. Skip forward a little bit. The best thing that we could do, and to date in the states, no breed association has done this, is actually combine heifer pregnancy with days to calving and kind of a joint two-trait analysis. This gets at, were they fertile early in life, so as a young female, and this gets at then really kind of postpartum interval. Did they conceive early in subsequent calving seasons throughout the rest of their life? Makes good sense to me. I argued that at BIF in 2010, and obviously either everyone in the room disagreed or they just have decided not to do it yet. The other thing, and I know we have speakers after lunch that'll talk about genomics, but this has aided the amount of information we have going into genetic evaluation for fertility traits. So Red Angus and Simmental as examples, genetic correlations between the genomic predictor and heifer pregnancy in Red Angus, about 0.6. Between the genomic predictor and stayability in Simmental, pretty close to the same value. That says that those genomic predictors are explaining roughly 35% of the genetic variation for those traits, so improving accuracy of fertility EPDs early in life. For commercial producers, though, although there's products to sort commercial females based on their genetic propensity for fertility, if we go through this small example, we assume these genetic correlations above, heritability of heifer pregnancy at being 15%, that means that these tests would explain roughly 5% of the phenotypic variation. If you're a commercial producer, I argue what you're interested in is, does she actually get pregnant? In which case, you're interested in the amount of phenotypic variation those tests describe. And that's relatively limited. The other issue is, we do not have tests that work well across breeds and in crossbred cattle. So that's the other cautionary tale. Oh, by way of introduction, Jerry, this goes into your talk this afternoon. Probably the best shot we have relative to genomics at making a footprint in fertility is through whole genome sequence information. Missing homozygotes, essentially, looking through the genome and saying, I see at a locus, big A, big A, little a, but I don't see animals that have little a, little a. And what's that say? The little a genotype, for some reason, is not represented in the population, which suggests that it is not fit. So that could be things like early embryonic mortality. The folks in the dairy industry published this paper in 2011. So to quickly summarize, as if I hadn't been quickly summarizing all along, one thing that perhaps wasn't germane to this talk, well, actually, probably the last 10 slides weren't germane, but I wanted to say it anyway. For those of you that think culling open cows is selection for improved fertility, you're wrong. Okay? Culling open cows is not selection for fertility. That's very much akin to saying, as a seed stock producer, I select for increased yearling weight because I cut those five dinks over there and didn't leave them bulls. I left off the very bottom end, and because of that, I say I'm actually selecting for it. It's not the same thing. A selection for fertility says that you have put direct selection pressure to improve it, okay, through things like EPD, selecting for the better ones instead of just removing the bad ones. Those are different philosophies. Okay? Scrotal circumference seems to be the most useful in Bos indicus as an indicator of fertility, although those relationships are still low. And the focus should be on direct measures, and I mentioned some breeds that have those traits like stayability and heifer pregnancy. A genomics approach could be useful, and we'll hear more about that this afternoon, but that does not alleviate the need for fertility phenotypes, okay, at all. And that's a big crux of our national cattle evaluation now, is we don't have a lot of fertility phenotypes coming into it. Even with genomics, we still need those. And commercial cattle producers obviously shouldn't forget about the obvious. If fertility is a concern to you, and it's a concern to all of us improving it, crossbreed. And I may have offended a couple of people by that, but I don't really care. So with that, I don't know how I did on time, but I'm perfect. He never even held up his sign. I'm going to be around the rest of the day, guys, so I don't want to hold you up from lunch. You want to discuss anything with me, feel free to grab me and pull me aside. If it's kind. If it's not, then I'm busy.